Lindsey trying to get his Division I basket off the mark, followed by Manning, is good. And it's all academic at this point. The Hawkeyes victorious at home in the first round of the NIT.
And so ends the season that was not the greatest for the Kansas State men's basketball team, losing to Iowa on Tuesday night in the first round of the NIT, a 91-82 loss in the end as the Hawkeyes move on to the next round in the NIT. And K-State finishes their season at 19-15. We'll talk more about that coming up in K-State in Focus here on the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94. Still to come, too, we have bad news that was announced on Tuesday by Bill Self, head coach of the KU men's basketball team, as they get ready for the NCAA tournament. And the tournament actually got underway on Tuesday night with two of the first four games of the NCAA, first four there in Dayton, and then also there's some college football notes, all money moves, and I'll give my thoughts on that. Nobody cares about my thoughts on it, probably, because I think most people have people probably care about my thoughts, or else I wouldn't be doing this, right? But I think most people are going to agree with me. But the reason I say nobody cares is that the people that need to care don't care, is why I say it like that, because there's a football game coming up for the K-State team in the fall that's been scheduled for a day that should not be having college football played on it. We'll just put it that way for now. Again, welcome in on the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Glad to have you with us today. Sports Ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiva Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. You can find them south of Courthouse there in Beloit, KivaBrothers.com. Before we get to all of that that's coming up in the Sports Ticket, do want to pass along a couple local notes. Softball's already underway for the Sylvan Lucas Lincoln Lady Mustang softball team. They split a doubleheader with Pratt Skyline yesterday. Skyline took the first game in Pratt. They're 4-3. Sylvan Lucas won the second one 6-4. So everything underway there. We do have all the schedules posted now at ncksports.com for the North Central Activities Association, Northern Plains League, as well as Smith Center and Concordia. So if you want to see where your favorite teams are headed here during the spring sports season, visit ncksports.com. All right. Also, at the website, you can read about the new head football coach for the Concordia Panthers. Assistant coach Brad Wildeman has been promoted to head coach, taking over for Jordan Etcher, who resigned in January after five seasons leading the program. Wildeman has been an assistant with the Panthers since 2021, as has 25 years of high school football coaching experience with 23 as an assistant. He was a head coach at Colby in 2002 and 2003. I actually covered one of his teams on some of the games that I did while I was going to school out at Colby. Those high school games that we had on the college radio station, I was the one that did them. So I remember when Brad was coaching out at Colby, but he does have that head coaching experience. 4-14 in those 2 years as a head coach. Again, the other 23 as assistant. The last 3 years in Concordia as an assistant coach under Coach Etcher. And again, you can read more about Wildeman's resume at ncksports.com. Another Trigo grad, I can tell you that. I believe he was older than my sister and Wade in that class of 94. So Brad Wildeman, I've known him for pretty much all my life as far as when I could start knowing people. So the name is very familiar, and it's very familiar with Concordia, as he's been on the sidelines as an assistant coach in football and also boys basketball over the last few years. So people know him, and they know who he is, and will step up into the head coaching role. It's just his contract as an assistant was just transferred to the head coaching spot, and he'll be the coach for the Concordia Panthers in 2024 in high school football. Again, read more at ncksports.com. All right. We'll get this K-State men's basketball thing out of the way here coming up.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
The thing I'm most proud of these guys about has very little to do with what they did on the basketball court. We played at Cincinnati and lost on a buzzer beater, a game to go to the NCAA tournament type game. Fly back that night, I think we got home probably around 2 in the morning. At 8 o'clock in the morning, our guys were at an elementary school reading to kids. Those are the kind of dudes that we have in our program. That's what our program's about and what it's built on. And we're going to win a bunch of basketball games, right? But the standard that we had this year for wins is we didn't meet it, but we met everything else. What we do in the locker room, what we do in the classroom, what we do in the community, how we conduct ourselves, how we treat people. And so I couldn't be more proud of these young men.
Jerome Tang, K-State coach, after his team sees the season come to a close on Tuesday night in the first round of the NIT, losing to Iowa by a final of 91-82. It was a hot start for Iowa. They got out to an early double-digit lead, and K-State actually never led in this game. They had a couple ties, I believe, there early. It was 3-3. Actually, they only had the one tie. It was 0-0, obviously, and then 3-3, and then Iowa kind of hit some shots and then started pulling away gradually by the midway point, a little earlier than the midway point of the first half. They were already up by double digits. K-State did fight back within three at one point early in the second half. It was 50-39 at halftime. K-State got that lead down to 52-49. At one point, but that was the closest K-State would get as Iowa was able to pull it back out into double figures in the end, and they led 91-80 when they got to K-State got kind of a meaningless basket at the end. I don't think it didn't affect the spread, so it truly was meaningless. I know that sometimes you say meaningless, and then somebody had something riding on a point spread, and it really wasn't meaningless, but it was. 91-82 ended up being the final, a 9-point win for Iowa over K-State. It's funny because you know, talking with other K-State fans, and Peyton Sanford caught fire really early, and we knew I talked about him yesterday. He was their leading scorer and had a very good shooting percentage, and one of the best 3-point shooters in the country. And Coach Tang was like, "Yeah, the scouting report, it was all over there. We can't let him get loose," and he got loose, and he had 22 points in the first half and finished with 30. Peyton Sanford did. And went 7-11 from 3-point land in the game. So that's that game last night was really a microcosm of K-State men's basketball all season long, right? They get down early, build a tough hole to climb out of, or dig a tough hole to climb out of, and they try to climb out of it. They got within three. And then in the end, it gets back to double figures, and K-State ends up losing the game. There were so many of those games that were on the road. Again, K-State just 1-8 in conference play in road games this year. And that's why they weren't in the tournament. And last night's game is a good way of closing out the fact that tournament talk was outrageous with this team. And I don't always say that based on one performance in the NIT, because who knows what they would do if they would have actually been in the tournament. I don't know that it would have gone much different than it did last night, right? But that's how it ended, and K-State finishes their year at 19-15. Day-Day Ames had a career high 16 for the Wildcats in the loss. There were four players in double figures for K-State. Again, 16 for Ames. Will McNair had 15. He went 7 of 10 from the floor. 13 points for Cam Carter, and 12 added by David Gasson. And then the two leading scorers, Tyler Perry and Arthur Kaluma, were held to a combined 13 points. Perry had 8. And kind of like a lot of games this year, didn't shoot particularly well. He was 2 of 12 from 3. Kaluma finished with just 5 points. There were comments about it on Twitter, and I don't disagree. Kaluma, I don't know if he actually wanted to be there or not. It was the body language wasn't the greatest. We'll just say that. So, and I think that was just typical for K-State. You know, Tang did get a lot of different guys in and got minutes for some different people. Buddy Rich actually played 13 minutes. He had 7 points, 5 rebounds. And then R.J. Jones got 14 minutes as well. And then at the end of the game, when it was decided, Taj Manning came in, and Dorian Finister was in for 4 minutes. And then you heard Tamont Lindsey missing the shot there, trying to get a D1 bucket, like the play-by-play cut said. So a lot of different guys played, but it was not a success for K-State. Ben Creakey had 24 and 11 for Iowa, double-double, and along with the 30 points that Peyton Sanford scored, he also had 12 rebounds. So, yeah, It was a domination by Iowa, and they move on to the NIT second round. 16 teams left, so they'll move on there and take on Utah, who won last night as well. So close the book on the NIT and the Kansas State season. Again, not a fun one if you're a K-State fan. A lot of high expectations coming into the year, obviously, after an Elite Eight run last year, and Coach Tang doing so many good things in year one. And, you know, you expected to have Naquan Tomlin back, and Quez Glover was a guy that was going to come in and play the point guard position for you as a freshman, likely. And Glover got hurt. Naquan Tomlin was never cleared to play by K-State. He was suspended and out indefinitely. And then finally in December, they said, see you later, you're done. He graduated like 2 days later and then was off to Memphis and played for the Tigers the rest of this season. And so, yeah, that's kind of how that goes for the Wildcats. And it was tough. It was not fun as a K-State fan to see some of the things go astray and awry as the season unfolded. But listen, I'm not sitting here ready to give up on Jerome Tang. I'll tell you that much right now. There are a lot of people, you know, that want to make comments. It's interesting that, you know, during the middle of the year when that Naquan Tomlin stuff was going on, everybody was so worried about Jerome Tang leaving because one certain media person started making it like he was about to leave because he was mad at the president, and there's small likelihood that he'll be back next year. I don't think Jerome Tang's going anywhere. Because of that, for sure, and for one. For two, he didn't have the season, and you heard in the cut that I played, you know, there's a standard that they have for winning that they didn't meet this year. And he won't get an extension because of that. He won't get a pay raise because of that, like he did after the first year, right? You don't get extensions and pay raises for going to the NIT. So it is what it is, and I think K-State moves forward now, and Jerome Tang hits the transfer portal, sees who he can bring in, hits the recruiting trail as the season's now officially over, and we'll probably start seeing guys from K-State enter the transfer portal. I'm not imagining that all these guys are going to stick around after a season like this, and then especially with Coach Tang probably looking for maybe some other guys. You know, the thing about that portal is I think we worry so much about the guys that are entering it, saying, hey, they're not sticking around to tough it out. I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty sure that there are some programs that recommend guys to go into the portal because they want other players on their team. And I think you're probably going to see that with KU this year in the offseason once their season comes to a close. And we'll talk about that coming up here momentarily. But right now we're in K-State in Focus, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Again, K-State men finishing their year at 19-15, a 91-82 loss in the first round of the NIT to Iowa. So it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out for K-State in the future with this men's basketball squad. Now, the women's basketball team, it's going well for them. And if they stay healthy, they're one of the best teams in the country. There's no doubt about it. They got all the way up to number two during the season and have had an outstanding year. The 25-7 had to play, about a month and a half without Ayoka Lee, their All-American center. And they weathered that storm for the most part. They're 15-1 at home this year, and they get to play at home for one more game and hopefully two more if K-State fans are honest about it, as K-State is 25-7, the number four seed, and Albany Regional number two in the women's NCAA tournament. And they'll get things going on Friday at 3:30 against the 13 seed Portland, who's 21-12. That will be in Bramlage Coliseum in Manhattan. I don't know if there's a ticket update, but the latest on that, yesterday that I saw, said there are 2,800 tickets remaining for the tournament, for the first and second round games there at Ramblers Coliseum in Manhattan. I'm trying to pull up and see if there's any update on the ticket sales there, but people are responding for sure. There's less than 2,100 tickets left. That was 16 hours ago, so I'd imagine that we're getting even closer and closer to being sold out for Bramlage Coliseum there at the first and second rounds. Again, first-round games, there'll be two of them. Again, Portland and K-State, and then following that will be Colorado taking on Drake in the 5-12 matchup, and the winner of those two games would play on Sunday at Bramlage Coliseum in Manhattan. So, again, fun time for the K-State women's basketball team as they're moving forward in the NCAA tournament. Also here on our K-State in Focus, the K-State baseball team continuing their season. And we pull that up here and give you an update on where they're at and what they've done over the last week or so with K-State baseball. As they had match up, they're 14-6 now overall, so a good start for K-State baseball, 2-1 in conference play. They won. I mean, this schedule is a little bit difficult to read. They did win over Wichita State 8-6 last night, and then they had wins on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They swept Missouri State 7-3, 12-6, and 11-3. And so, yeah, they're on a good winning streak right now. They've won, let's see, 2-6 in a row, coming into a series with Houston, which will be in Houston this weekend. They take on the Cougars 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and then Nebraska will be in on Tuesday at Toynton Family Stadium as well. So, again, that's what's coming up for K-State baseball. Out to a 14-6 record here, and again, a six-game winning streak at the moment. 11-2 record at home. K-State baseball had high expectations coming into the season, and looks like they're doing well in that realm. So, again, K-State in focus here today, and it's brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we will continue on our sports ticket brought to you by Keeper Brothers Automotive in Beloit, and we will tell you some tough news for the KU men's basketball team. Look at the first four, and we'll chat about college football and some of the things that I don't like about college football that happened on Tuesday. It's all coming up here on our sports ticket.
Extended warranties on vehicles have become a very popular thing. You may have bought one, but what do you do to take advantage of the benefits when you need them? Keever Brothers Automotive in Beloit works with most all warranty contracts, and we can be your advocate when you need repairs. Just bring us your car, your concerns, and a copy of the warranty contract, and we take care of the rest. Let our fast, friendly service help you get the most out of your extended warranty contract. Find Keever Brothers Automotive just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at keeverbrothers.com.
Kevin's not going to play. Kevin's says his knee pain has not subsided any, and it's too bad for him to be able to contribute. So Kevin will not play. No, he's out. We're shutting him down for the tournament. So if we're fortunate enough to win two games, we would have done it without him. And you know, he hadn't practiced in 6 weeks, basically. And so he would. He hasn't done more damage to his knee, but he tried to do it and said that he just couldn't go.
That's Bill Self, KU men's basketball coach, about Kevin McCullough, who will not play the rest of the season for KU. That's a tough blow for the Jayhawks, obviously. And you know, I was talking with somebody yesterday and saying that, you know, if they have Dickinson and McCullough both KU, this team could be very good. If they don't, it could be tough sledding for KU once you get to the tournament, and this is where we're at. Since February 5th, after they played K-State, Kevin McCullough played in just four games, and that was to finish off the regular season. February 17th, he played against Oklahoma. You know, he played quite a bit of minutes, 35 and then 32 against Baylor on March 2nd after sitting out for basically 2 weeks there. Came back and played against K-State at home and played 29 minutes there. And, you know, he's not been particularly bad when he did play. 20 points against Baylor and 19 against K-State in that win. And then he finished off the regular season in a 15-minute performance against Houston, but was shut down for the Big 12 tournament. And then now shut down for the remainder of the season. So Kevin McCullough, it's unfortunate for KU, obviously. He's not going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. You know, just kind of looking at Bill Self's body language and everything yesterday, he does not seem real happy about this development. And obviously he wouldn't be happy because he's losing one of his top scorers, or actually his top scorer overall. Kevin McCullough is averaging 18.5 points a game this year when he was healthy and playing. But, you know, if he's not out there, there's some problems. Hunter Dickinson's averaging 18 and 11 rebounds a game. McCullough's averaging 18 and a half. So, again, he was the leading scorer when he played, but he played in 26 games here this year and missed five of those for KU, or six, actually, as KU's played 32 this season. And they're 22 and 10 going into the tournament and getting ready for that. I don't think Bill Self feels like – I don't know. It's a vibe I'm getting. I don't know anything inside about it, but it – you know, there's some rumblings of maybe Kevin McCullough doesn't want to risk getting any more injured than he already is because he wants to get ready for the NBA draft because he's not coming back to Kansas. So maybe preparing himself for the pros and doesn't want to take any more risks than he's already taken here at the end of the year. Or maybe he just doesn't want to play. I don't know. There's some stuff about that, right? There are some people that I've heard saying they don't even know if he's really that injured. He's just sitting out getting ready for the NBA. I have no evidence to substantiate any of that. Those are just things that I'm seeing and have heard in different places. There's nothing to that for me. I don't have an inside source or anybody that can tell me the difference of what's going on there, but Bill Self does not seem overly pleased about it. In more ways than just not pleased because he's got an injured player, his leading scorer is hurt. I think there's probably maybe something a little deeper than that. I know Wade will probably try to maybe probe Brian Haney tomorrow about that on our weekly interview with the Voice of the Jayhawks, but I don't know what – Brian's probably not going to say much. He typically wouldn't, and I don't blame him for that, but we'll see if he has any other insight coming up tomorrow when we do talk with him as KU gets ready for the NCAA tournament. Kevin McCullough did release a statement on X or Twitter. He said, "First, I'd like to address Jayhawk Nation. Thank you for the support. In regard to me not playing in March Madness, if I could play, I would. I am more devastated than anyone knowing that I can't play and compete alongside my team and that my college career has now come to an end. I've done everything that I possibly could have done to get back playing at a high level to help my team. This included 6 to 7 hours a day with the training staff at Kansas for over a month now, while not participating in practice but competing in games while trying various treatment options. It's simply not where it needs to be to play the game. With a collective agreement between myself, the coaches, and the Kansas team doctors, it was decided that I should not play. This is the best time of year, and I wish I was able to help my brothers and KU on the court during this time, but unfortunately I cannot. I will be supporting them in Utah in the rest of this March run." So that's the statement from Kevin McCullough. Again, he wants to play is what he says there on X, and just says he can't do it. So he's obviously not going to come out and say, I don't want to play. So, you know, clearly putting a statement out like that covers his bases, and I don't have any reason to not believe him. But there, it's just kind of when, like I said, when he plays, he doesn't look like he's having major issues with it. But again, I mean, I know how adrenaline works, and you're pumped up, ready to play the game, and you might be able to fight through that. And I know that he's probably got, resources that a normal person wouldn't have to help himself feel better for the stretch of 2 to 2.5 hours that the basketball game is being played. So I don't want to read too much into any of that because, again, I don't know everything that's going on in that situation. But for KU fans, for KU as a whole, for their team, definitely unfortunate development because KU is not a team that can win a national championship without Kevin McCullough playing or Hunter Dickinson. If either one of those guys were out, they're not a team that can win. Now, Hunter Dickinson did have a dislocated shoulder as the season came to a close against Houston in the regular season finale, and he was shut down for the Big 12 tournament. KU only played one game in the Big 12 tournament before being bounced out, but Bill Self did say yesterday that Hunter is ready to go, so Hunter Dickinson will be playing. He was selected as a second-team AP All-American yesterday, and Kevin McCullough is actually an honorable mention Associated Press All-American as well. So there's two guys there that were honored by the AP as All-Americans, second and honorable mention teams. But Kevin McCullough out for the NCAA tournament. Hunter Dickinson is set to play. KU opens tomorrow night, and we'll definitely preview that with Brian Haney coming up tomorrow as well. The Jayhawks will play Samford in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That'll be in Salt Lake City. Tip-off's around 8:55. Fans can catch the game on Z96.3 through the Lakeland pregame at 8:30. Kansas, the number 4 seed at 22-10. Samford, the number 13 seed at 29-5. So, again, tough break for the Jayhawks. No Kevin McCullough. That means guys like Johnny Furphy, El Marco Jackson, Nicholas Timberlake, all going to have to step up for this team if they want to make a run in the tournament. They're probably going to have to do that anyway because you want to see usually you need like one player in a certain game here or there to do something that you're not expecting from them in the NCAA tournament, maybe. You know, David McCormick, I think it was one of those guys that you didn't expect him to do what he did in the Final Four and championship game for KU to help them win the national championship a couple of years back. So, you know, you get a guy that can step up and hit some shots for you like a Furphy or a El Marco Jackson suddenly develops into something big here and plays out of his mind in the tournament. That's maybe something that could help you. But, you know, I'm always one that goes through these things and says, here, this is the track record, this is what I've seen, and we haven't seen that on a regular basis from either one of those guys yet, right? And Nicholas Timberlake as well. Like, you haven't seen these guys step up and do those things that are, you know, championship-type things that are going to lead them to the promised land or even a big run in the NCAA tournament. So I'll believe it when I see it kind of person, and that's what it would take for Kansas because we haven't seen it yet. So, again, it'll be interesting to follow this run. And Samford's 29-5. I know they're not going to be an easy out now without McCuller on the floor. So Kansas, you know, I think is in a spot here where it might be danger time as far as just even being able to win a game here in the tournament and make it to the second round where they'll play either McNeese or Gonzaga if they would win. So, yeah, tough blow for Kansas without Kevin McCuller on the court, averaging 18.5 points a game, and he's kind of been in and out over the last month and a half for KU, and he's out for the rest of the year. Bill Self very adamantly stating that yesterday. The tournament actually did start last night. Interesting, actually, the first game was actually interesting as far as how it went, but I don't know about anybody else, but I'm not one of those fans that's sitting through an entire 40-minute 16 versus 16 seed first four play-in game. Wagner won 71-68. They had a big lead. I had it on the TV. I wasn't watching it. Let's just put it that way. And then I went to go do something else, and by the time I got back to my TV, Wagner was within 1 point, or Howard, excuse me, was within 1 point, and Wagner was just dominating the game. Wagner ended up winning it 71-68, so they move on there in the first four. Picking up that victory, they'll take on the top seed of North Carolina Tar Heels on Thursday with that win. That's their consolation, or that's their prize for winning that game. And then the second game, boy, I tell you what, if you wanted to watch a boring basketball game, this was the one to watch. 10 seeds in the Midwest, Virginia and Colorado State. Credit Colorado State, they bombed Virginia. But this thing was just completely outrageous as far as the offensive production from Virginia. They had 14 points at halftime. They went nearly an hour of real time by the time the first half finished to the start of the second half before making a basket. It was like 52 minutes in between baskets, and I get that 20 or 30 of those, whatever it is halftime. But Colorado State had a 27-14 lead. The Cavaliers hit 5 of 29 shots in the first half. They were 17% in the first half, failing to get a basket in the last 9 minutes and 20 seconds. It was rough. And they come out in the second half, and they're stuck at 14 all the way until the 17-minute mark. So they went 12 minutes and 2 seconds of play without making a basket, without scoring a single point. Or without making a basket anyway. 35-14 lead at the 17-minute mark, and then Reese Beekman finally made a jumper to end the drought to make it 35-16 Colorado State. But the damage had already been done. Colorado State, there was never any doubt that they were going to win this game, and Virginia was anemic offensively. It was bad. And this is not new for Virginia. This is not a team that's had a lot of success. I'm watching this game. I was actually talking to my sister on the phone while I was watching this game. I'm like, how did this team ever win a national championship with this style of play? You know, the Kyle Guy and those guys got hot, and they ended up winning the title the year after they had gotten bounced in the first round as a one seed by UMBC and then coming back the next year and winning the national championship. And it's just like, man, how did this style of play in this day and age win a title? And it was rough last night. It's a bad taste to leave in your mouth for Virginia. They lost 67-42 in the end. And then the story comes out today that Virginia, to look at its system after their struggles against Colorado State, they've been vulnerable to sluggish offensive outputs both this season and in the past. But Tuesday's low was particularly painful, is what this story says from Adam Rittenberg on ESPN. But, it was a lull that was not at all fun to watch. It was a disaster. And a lot of people today saying, or last night even after the game, saying, well, I think Indiana State might have been able to do better than that. Or somebody else that was left out of the tournament that was on the last four out compared to the last four in, or the first four out compared to the last four in. I think there's probably a list of teams that you could look at that I think probably would have put a better effort into it than. I'm not saying their effort wasn't there, but they didn't make, they were not making shots, and it was ugly to watch. That's the first four for you, though. Colorado State, they're happy. They move on to play Texas in the first round of the Midwest coming up on Thursday. That'll be Thursday evening at 5:50, and that will be in Charlotte. So Colorado State happy about their win. They dominated, 25-point win, moving on to the actual bracket in the NCAA Men's Tournament. More tournament games tonight in the play-in or first four, as at 5:40, Montana State and Grambling, two 16 seeds, will play in that first game tonight in Dayton. That'll be that's in the Midwest region. The winner moves on to take on top seed of Purdue. And then at 8:10 tonight, Colorado, soon to be another Big 12 member again after this season is over. They'll play at 8:10 against Boise State, two 10 seeds. And they will play for the right to move on into the bracket in the South region and take on Florida in the first round coming up on Friday. So those are the games going on tonight. Again, 5:40, it's Montana State and Grambling, and 8:10, Boise State and Colorado on the men's side in the NCAA tournament. Full brackets for the NCAA tournament at NCAA.com. And again, we'll have KU coming up tomorrow night. Their first game against Samford. We'll preview that tomorrow on the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94. Again, the Sports Ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiever Brothers Automotive, your home team for fast and friendly auto repair there in Beloit. All right, we're going to wrap up our talks here. Again, College Hoops Associated Press, by the way, All-American teams. We mentioned Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough. The AP first team was Zach Edey of Purdue, Tennessee's Dalton Connect, R.J. Davis from North Carolina, Jamal Shedd of Houston, and UConn's Tristan Newton were all on the first team AP All-American basketball team. They're released on Tuesday. So that's a look at College Hoops. All right, we'll wrap up the Sports Ticket here with some college football notes. And, you know, one of the things that you know about college football is greed runs the show. And it's all about the Benjamins. And I could have talked about this in case they didn't focus, but it does tie into another thing that happened on Tuesday with the Benjamins that I was just talking about. The Kansas State football team announced, and this was changed on their schedule a while back to say Friday or Saturday. They have a non-conference home-and-home series they had already scheduled with Arizona, which, interestingly enough, would be a conference team next year. So they're going to still play this non-conference game that was scheduled as a non-conference game. It's not going to count against conference standings, but they had already scheduled this. You know, these schedules get put together years and years in advance to make sure you can fill these things up and get some opponents on the schedule that you would like to get on there that might help your resume if you're trying to make it to the college football playoff or whatever that might be, and help out your chances to do the best in the end and have a best chance to win a national championship. So again, this home and home had been scheduled with Arizona a few years back. I mean, it's been on the schedule, and then I don't know how recently it was that it said that the game would be played either Friday or Saturday, September 13th or 14th. Well, K-State announces yesterday this game will be Friday Night Lights, is what their Twitter post says. And thanks, I hate it. We've gone through all this before. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but it is absurd and ridiculous. I hate, there's not, I'm like Wade, right? There's not a lot of times that we use the word hate on this platform or really in general in my life. I don't use that word and just throw it around like some people might. I hate this. I hate college football on Friday night. It's selfish partly, and I think it's selfish for a lot of people, but I think people understand why people hate it, because Friday night is high school football night. And it should be reserved for high school football. Who are these colleges recruiting? High school football players. And this just continues to add on and confirm the fact that I've said for quite some time that college, and I used to say it about pro sports, but it's seeping into college now too, and especially in the biggest college sport in football, is that these people absolutely do not care about who's in their seats, about who's in the stands for the game. Do you want to sell out? Do you want to brag about that? Absolutely. Do you care which people are in those seats to do that for you? You absolutely do not. Do you care about the money that you're going to get from a game being on national television and your eyes, or all the eyes being on basically only your game because there's nothing else going on that Friday night in college football because high school football is being played and there's not a lot of games on Friday night because of that probably anyway. But hey, let's add to them and let's play more of them. K-State had a conference game last year on a Friday night against Oklahoma State. KU's first two games of the season last year were on Friday night. It's insane and absurd that you would play even more than one of them in one season. It's absurd you play one of them in a season. And KU's first two games last year were on Friday night. And here's the thing. As a KU affiliate here, that bumps them off our radio station. We're not going to override a local football game on a high school Friday night when we have minimal opportunities. It's easier in basketball where, you know, okay, we can put KU on the station because we're going to have multiple opportunities to put basketball on if they play on a Tuesday or a Friday or during a tournament week that we're covering a team and we can finagle it to where usually KU is going to get on and it's not going to really take away from our product of what we offer. But when there are only eight regular season high school football games and two of them, you're going to sit here and say, because KU's playing, we're going to knock them off the air. It's not going to happen. We're based on local, and we're going to put the high school game on the air. This is not the case with K-State because we're not a K-State affiliate, but I'm just saying these are the things that you look at when we're in our position as a radio station and as people that are putting out the content for the listeners that we love, right? And I know that KU football fans might want to listen to those games, but and they might have wanted to here this past season, but we didn't have a KU football game on the radio until the third week because the first two were on a Friday night, and it's absurd. I don't like it. I never have. You know, K-State 1 year played on a Wednesday night back in the tenure of the coach before Bill Snyder and after Bill Snyder. After and then before Bill Snyder. Ron Prince. I don't like saying his name, if you can tell. Anyway, K-State played on a Wednesday night during that tenure, right? And so I thought that was absurd, but at least it's not the same night as high school football. I could deal with a Wednesday night more than a Friday night, but it's just the way it is. And what's it about? It's about the money. It's about the Benjamins. It's about getting eyes on your team. How are you getting eyes on your team when nobody's going to watch, though, because they're high school football games? That's what I don't like, but in this day and age, you can be sitting at a high school football game and pull the dang game up on your phone and still watch it and give them the ratings and the numbers that they want at ESPN or FS1 or Fox or whatever station this game's going to be on. They'll get the numbers that they need. And that's the problem is we'll complain about it, but it won't change anything because we'll still watch it because we want to consume it. They're not dumb. They understand what's going on. They know they're making money and they're not going to stop making money on it. So why change? Why would we do anything different? I mean, we can complain until the cows come home, but we're still going to watch that game. I'm still trying to pay attention to K-State and Oklahoma State on a Friday night when I'm covering a high school football game. I want to know what happened. I want to know if my team's playing any good. Now, particularly that game, it was nice to have on a Friday night because they laid an egg that night in Stillwater and did not play well. But it is just the case of, you know, I think a lot of small town, and especially at K-State and KU, really, when you're kind of looking at who your consumer base is, and a lot of colleges around the country, you know, some of these universities are in very big cities, and, you know, you're going to pull from whoever you pull from. You're still going to fill your stadium, and people are going to be there. But, you look at the season ticket holder base at K-State in particular, KU as well, you're looking at a lot of people that are coming from rural communities and small towns filling your seats. And most of those people from rural communities and small towns want to fill their seats in their high school stadium on Friday night, not in the college stadium. And so now you're asking them to choose, do you want to go support your high school or do you want to use the seat that you spent a heck of a lot more money on to come to Manhattan and go to K-State? And there's only six home games this year for K-State as well, and one of them is going to be on a Friday night. So you've taken a base of fans away from that. But once again, as I said earlier, who cares? When you're making that much money, who cares about the people that are in your seats and in your stands that have helped you build this program? That have helped you build it from the ground up, a terrible program that started with Bill Snyder building it from the ground up and kept going because the fans kept supporting it. And the fans kept putting their butts in the seats and doing it. But who cares about those people? Because we're going to make millions and now billions of dollars because the college football playoff is expanding, and ESPN wants it all. They want to be part of it. They want to have the exclusive streaming rights, the exclusive cable rights, the exclusive all television rights. And when we're talking about millions of dollars for having a game on a Friday night with K-State and Arizona on September 13th, we're talking about billions of dollars on a six-year, $7.8 billion contract college football playoff and ESPN have agreed to keep the college football playoff and all of its broadcast rights on ESPN through 2031-32. Jointly announced on Tuesday that ESPN will be the sole media rights holder of the college football playoff. They had held exclusive rights since the college football playoff began in 2015. It'll expand its package for the final 2 years of the current 12-year contract, which runs through the 25-26 season. College football playoff unveiling that 12-team format for 24-25. ESPN will add all four of the new first-round games each year to the network's existing coverage of the New Year's Six Bowls, which will be the now quarterfinals and semifinals, and then the college football playoff national championship game. Talking about a monopoly, right? I thought that those weren't supposed to be able to happen, but seems to me that's where we're at. ESPN also secured a six-year agreement that will cost $1.3 billion annually beginning in the 26-27 season and includes exclusive rights to all rounds of the expanded playoff, along with continued exclusive rights to all programming connected to the college football playoff, such as the CFP selection show, weekly top 25 ranking shows, and more. ESPN Chairman Jimmy Pitaro said in a statement, ESPN has worked very closely with the college football playoff over the past decade to build one of the most prominent events in American sports. We look forward to enhancing our valued relationship over the next 2 years and then continuing it for six more as we embark on this new expanded playoff era. This agreement further solidifies ESPN as the home of college football as well as a destination for the vast majority of major college championships for the next 8 years. Blah, blah, blah. Money, money, money. They're all seeing green. That's what's going on. And listen, I get it. This is where we're at, and that's what we're doing. So you can't complain about it. Like I said, if we keep consuming it and keep paying for it and keep going right back to the well, because we crave it. And if you're a sports fan, you crave it. You know, we complain about the college football playoff, who gets in and who doesn't, and who should and who shouldn't. And Florida State was, you know, I think most people think jobbed of a playoff berth this year, robbed of a playoff berth. And what did we do? We still watched every game of the college football playoff, if you're actually a college football fan. And even for some people in the national championship, even if they're not a college football fan, they're still watching that game. No different than the Super Bowl, right, which had the biggest ratings ever this year with the Chiefs and 49ers. But it's definitely on a smaller scale of viewership for the college football playoff, but it's big enough. And it's big enough to put together a six-year, $7.8 billion contract that keeps ESPN as the rights holder through 2031-32. So these are money moves, and we can complain about it all we want, but we keep feeding the beast. And when you do that, nothing's going to change. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody cares about the fans that are in the seats and the stands. As long as you're putting that game on your streaming platform, on your television, on your cable, on your computer, whatever you're using, as long as you're doing all that, they don't care who's in the stands. And it doesn't affect them if there's not a sold-out stadium. Does it help them? Sure, it gets a bonus anymore to have a sold-out stadium. It doesn't affect them, though, on their bottom line if it's not sold out. And so this is where we're at. It's all about ratings, TV, streaming. And again, like we've talked about so much, streaming is the future. And get used to that part of it, too. You know, I wouldn't be surprised by the end of this contract that these games are not on ESPN's cable channel, but they're on the ESPN app, on a smart TV, on ESPN Plus, with all these extra things that are going on, like the Manning cast and Monday Night Football. But, you know, they have an alternate broadcast with Pat McAfee. They have an alternate Spanish broadcast. They have so many alternate broadcasts now. You know, coaches breaking down in the studio what's going on with the college football championship and semifinals. And I'll probably expand to all the quarterfinal games and that as well. So that's all going to be on your computer or your smart TV or your phone is where you're going to be watching that most of that stuff here probably before too long. It's sooner than you think, I feel like. We're already seeing that with the exclusive streaming on Peacock with the playoff game with the Chiefs and Dolphins this year. Exclusive Peacock game during the regular season this year as well. And that's only on streaming. So buckle in for that part of this too. as we move on and evolve with sports broadcasting. And like I've said before, that's not just sports broadcasting. I've been streaming all of my video content for probably about 2 years now. And so if we're doing it here in small town America, it's not far along that it's happened. It's going to happen everywhere. And just warning everybody to lock in for that part of it. But again, 6 years, $7.8 billion contract between ESPN and the college football playoff for ESPN to be the sole media rights holder of everything college football playoff, whether it's the games, selection shows, college football playoff ranking shows, all that. They're paying a load of money to keep all of that on ESPN. And I say, well, great. I'll watch it, whatever channel it's on, but I'm not watching your original programming if it's not a live sporting event. It's just the way it is, right? A lot of money being thrown around. Sorry to the people that have tickets to K-State Arizona that can't go on a Friday night because they want to support their hometown school and high school football. But the bottom line that we've learned here with all of this, not only today, but throughout this whole entire time, is that they don't care. As long as you consume it, it doesn't matter to them where you're consuming it. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.